You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Deanna Lee.
And I'm Evan Banks. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's April 19th.
All eyes have been on the Middle East this week, with new fears of a wider regional war. Iran carried out an aerial attack against Israel last weekend in retaliation for what is widely thought to have been an Israeli strike on an Iranian embassy in Syria earlier this month. Nearly all the drones and missiles Iran used in the attack were intercepted. Throughout the week, global leaders urged restraint in hopes of avoiding further escalation, and the world waited, wondering whether and how Israel would respond. As we record early Friday morning on the East Coast, we appear to have an answer. According to Israeli, Iranian, and U.S. officials, Israel launched missiles into Iran overnight. While the nature and scope of the strikes are still coming into focus, early reporting suggests that the extent of the damage was limited. What happens next remains unclear. Writing just before Iran's attack on Israel last weekend, RAND's Michelle Grisset discussed the prospects of a direct conflict between the two Middle Eastern countries. She focused on why Russia, which has deepened its partnership with Iran in recent years, stands to lose a great deal if such a war breaks out. For one, a broader conflict in the Middle East, particularly one that involves a direct clash between Israel and Iran, could cause new tensions between Russia and Iran. It would limit Iran's ability to continue serving as a military supplier to Russia, and lead Tehran to demand more Russian support at a time when Moscow has limited capacity to provide it. Further, a war in the Middle East could give China an opening to serve as a mediator. This may be especially worrying for Moscow, as its war in Ukraine has already contributed to Russia's growing dependence on China. Grisset notes that Russia has capitalized on instability in the Middle East in the past. Look no further than Syria and Libya, where Moscow, as well as Russian private military companies, intervened amid conflict. But this time, Russia is in no position to do so.
How might generative artificial intelligence change teaching and learning? This question has been on the minds of educators since tools like ChatGPT became widely available. While the answer likely won't be clear for some time, a new RAND study takes a first step by shedding light on AI being used in classrooms today. Our researchers asked teachers and school district leaders across the United States about whether and how they use AI products and tools. Here's an overview of the findings. As of fall 2023, 18% of K-12 teachers reported using AI for teaching. Another 15% said they tried using AI at least once. Middle and high school teachers and those who taught English or social studies were more likely to use AI. The most common ways that teachers used AI tools were to adapt content to fit the level of their students and to generate instructional materials. By the end of this school year, 60% of districts plan to have trained teachers about AI use. Urban districts were the least likely to deliver such training. In interviews, school district leaders described focusing more on increasing teachers' use of AI and less on crafting policies for student use of AI, primarily because they saw the potential for AI to make teachers' jobs easier. So what does this all mean? Well, the use of AI in schools is still in its early stages, and it's currently limited to a minority of teachers. But it appears poised to grow, and that's why further research on this topic is so vital. As school districts and teachers continue to roll out AI in the classroom, it will be important to track outcomes that may affect students, including the quality of AI-generated instructional content and AI's potential to worsen educational inequality.
Another new RAND study published recently focused on what's going on at U.S. schools. Our researchers examined a growing problem that affects teachers and students: threats of violence. Between 2021 and 2022, the number of threats against schools rose by 60%. These threats are typically made anonymously over social media and are often meant as jokes or intended to create havoc across a school or district. But just because most of these threats aren't real doesn't mean they don't cause harm. Even if a threat turns out to be a hoax, schools are often forced to implement lockouts, lockdowns, and cancellations, which can take a severe emotional toll on students, teachers, and school staff. Our report provides a number of practical recommendations to help schools respond to these threats, but it also identifies some keys related to reporting violent threats and preventing them in the first place. It's essential to establish a strong reporting culture in which students, parents, and others immediately report threats when they become aware of them. This can provide more time for critical decision making. And more needs to be done to communicate to students and others in the community about the potential consequences of making threats, even when a threat is a hoax. Overall, the authors emphasize that investigating and responding to social media-based threats, particularly anonymous ones, needs to be a multidisciplinary effort. School administrators are usually not trained investigators. They should be able to rely on local law enforcement partners and other specialists, such as psychologists, to assess the credibility of threats. Such coordination could go a long way toward helping schools respond to threats appropriately.
China produces and distributes the vast majority of precursor chemicals used to make illegal fentanyl. Disrupting China's role at the start of the fentanyl global supply chain is likely the most effective way to reduce how much of the substance is available to users. A single 55-gallon drum of precursors could equate to millions of doses of fentanyl on the street. This week, RAND's David Lucky testified before a House of Representatives committee about this issue. He emphasized the importance of taking a multidimensional approach to this problem and identified a few key areas to focus on. For example, detecting illegal drugs or precursor chemicals at U.S. ports of entry remains a challenge. To address potential gaps, the Department of Homeland Security could promote technological solutions to help enhance border screening of cargo and vehicles. Addressing Chinese money laundering is also necessary. Mexican transnational criminal organizations have made tens of millions of dollars of cryptocurrency payments to Chinese chemical producers for fentanyl precursors. And there are potentially billions of dollars of illegal fentanyl entering the United States. Another key, limiting illegal fentanyl sales online. A RAND analysis found that many of the websites that sell fentanyl online appear to be tied to suppliers in China. These are just a few examples of what might be done to limit China's role in America's opioid crisis, and by extension, stem production and distribution of lethal synthetic opioids like fentanyl. Notably, Lucky emphasized the enormity of the problem. To surmount this will take not only a whole-of-government approach, he said, but also a whole-of-nation effort by the United States.
As outer space becomes more congested and contested, U.S. cooperation with allies and partners is essential. While Washington has had some success in this area, RAND experts say that entrenched organizational, regulatory, and practical challenges continue to limit cooperation. In fact, a recent RAND study revealed that decades-old policies and practices are leading to some major challenges. For instance, information sharing is a consistent struggle due to insufficient IT infrastructure and constraints on sharing classified information with allies. And although it's important to address such issues, there may be a bigger problem. There are real questions within the government about which organizations should be in the lead on space coordination, and when and whether it is even in the U.S. interest to deepen cooperation in space. These unresolved organizational divides are contributing to allies' confusion about U.S. space priorities. That's why, our researchers say, the United States must be more transparent and consistent about the realistic prospects for cooperation in the space domain. Being forthright will enable allies and partners to make choices about their own investments and operations, which will strengthen future coalition capabilities. This is a first key step to making tangible progress toward allied space power.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We'll see you next week. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.